I'm pleased to announce the first presenter. Dr. Ryan Murphy is with the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, and the title of his talk is Factors Associated with Clusters of Risk Behavior Among Men Who Have Sex with Men and Men Who Have Sex with Women with Early Syphilis in Los Angeles County, 2010 to 2012.
Good morning, everyone. Oh, there we go. So just to dive right in here, I'm going to start by giving a brief overview of early syphilis in Los Angeles. But just to make sure we're all on the same page, by early syphilis, I'm referring to the infectious stages of the disease, which are primary, secondary, and early latent. In 2012 in Los Angeles, we had a little over 2,000 cases, and approximately 85% of that was among men who have sex with men. And our morbidity in Los Angeles is very highly clustered within certain geographic regions. So this is a map of Los Angeles County, and we have our 2012 syphilis rates. And as you can see, by far our highest concentration of disease occurs in Service Planning Area 4, which includes the city of West Hollywood. For people who aren't familiar with Los Angeles, West Hollywood is a city that has a greater proportion of gay and bisexual men than other areas of the county. Once we get out of SPA 4, we see our next largest cluster of disease occurs in SPA 6, and this area includes South Los Angeles, and relative to the rest of the county, it has a larger proportion of African Americans. So just to kind of set the stage of our disease burden. The goals of this particular analysis were first to identify clusters or latent classes, I'll use those interchangeably, of risk behaviors among MSM with early syphilis. And then once we have identified those clusters, to examine associations between those clusters and other demographic and geographic variables. The methods the sample for this analysis was all cases of early syphilis among MSM that were reported to the Division of HIV and STD Programs between 2010 and 2012, and we had a little over 4,000 cases. And the analytical approach we used was a latent class analysis, which I'll explain a little bit further. So LCA, is the acronym for latent class analysis, is a statistical procedure for identifying clusters of individuals within a population. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go into too specifics about how the methods work, although I'm happy to answer questions or talk to people afterwards. But essentially, in our model, we put in a set of variables, and then the program splits people out into clusters or groups based on people who are reporting a similar set of variables. So whatever the response profile is, people who have similar ones go into one class, another one goes into a second class, and it kind of splits your data out. And a neat thing about latent class analysis is after we do that, then we can look at associations between your classes and other variables to see who is more or less likely to be in a particular cluster or class. For this analysis, we use six variables. All of them were dichotomized as yes, no, and all pertain to risk behavior within the past 12 months. And the six variables we used were any anonymous partners, three or more sex partners, substance use, having sex while being high or intoxicated, trading sex for drugs or money, or the inverse of that, trading drugs or money for sex. And I'm not going to spend too much time on the table, but I did think it was important to show what the results of these analyses look like. So we put those variables into the model, and this is what we get out. And the first thing is on the very top, you can see we identified five unique clusters of risk behavior. And then if you go a little below, for each cluster, it tells us what percentage of the sample that cluster accounts for. And then we get these series of item response probabilities. And what they are is they're just the percentage of people in each of those clusters who reported that particular behavior. So once we see these item response probabilities, we kind of zoom back, look at the big picture, and we say, what are the defining characteristics of this cluster or class? And then we qualitatively assign a name to that based on who's answering which of the behaviors. So hopefully a little more friendly view to look at the data. In this analysis, we identified five unique clusters. And the first cluster, which really surprised me, was that 33% of the sample was a no-identified risk group. We've put identified in quotation marks because these are all men with early syphilis. So we know everybody's high risk. It's just in that first class, in that first cluster of people, they weren't reporting any of the six risk behaviors, really. So they overall appeared to be a low-risk group, even though we know they're not. The second class we identified was 48% of the sample, and that comprised people who had sex with anonymous and many partners. 11% of the sample, which was our third cluster, reported substance use during sex, plus many partners and anonymous partners. Our fourth class was 7% of the sample, and it had substance use during sex, plus anonymous partners. And then our last class, which was the smallest of them, was a little under 2%, were people who reported all six of the risk behaviors. And that was the only cluster of individuals who was reporting the trading sex for drugs or money or vice versa. So once we've seen the clusters, the next thing we can do is we can look at other variables, demographic, geographic factors, and see who is more or less likely to be in a particular cluster. You can interpret these odds ratios just like you would a logistic regression, except we also have to assign one of our classes as a reference group. So that's why the class 2 doesn't have any data there, because that's the reference. We actually found quite a few associations, but I just want to highlight a couple that we thought were most interesting. So the first was that relative to whites, African-American and Latino MSM were more likely to be in the no identified risk or the substance use during sex plus anonymous partners clusters. So that means that's where they were, and then our white participants were more likely to be in the reference class. And then second, which was very highly correlated with race ethnicity, was a geographic finding. And essentially it was that MSM not living in SPA 4, and particularly those living in SPA 6, were more likely to be in that no identified risk group. Whereas the SPA 4 guys would be more likely then to be in the reference class. So what can we conclude from some of these findings? First, I think it's just important to recognize that there was a wide range of risk behaviors that appear to have contributed to the early syphilis infections in Los Angeles over that time period. And while I think many of these we expected going in, I, for one, was very surprised that a third of the sample fell into this no identified risk group based on at least those six risk factors that we put in. So then the question comes, well, great, you found some clusters, but why do we care? And I think one of the main reasons is because our findings do suggest that a large proportion of minority MSM, many of whom are living in SPA 6, acquired early syphilis through a pattern of behavior that's unlikely to be detected during a routine evaluation of sexual risk. So if you think of a provider taking a sexual history or something like that, those no identified risk guys aren't really going to jump out as somebody that they may want to follow up with. So there's this thought that, or more of a question that comes from this analysis, does this mean that that group is getting less screening? And if so, are there infections that are going untreated? So what can we do? First, I think the data suggests that it might be useful to do targeted interventions to specific groups based on their risk profiles. So we could look at those clusters and see, for example, who was reporting substance use with their behaviors, and then maybe that's part of your intervention for that particular group or geographic area. So just better targeting of our interventions. And secondly, and I think maybe most applicable and important, is at least for us in LA, it means we need to look at the messaging to providers working in SPA 6 and make sure we're really driving home the importance of routine syphilis screening for MSM, even in the absence of reported risk behaviors. So that one-year recommended screening for all MSM regardless, we really need to make sure that in SPA 6, particularly in Los Angeles, that we're communicating that to our partners. There are some limitations with these analyses that I think we need to keep in mind. The first is that, like all sensitive behaviors, sexual risk and substance use are likely underreported, so we always have to view our data with that lens. And then secondly, latent class analysis is at its heart a data reduction and data exploration approach. It's not hypothesis-driven. We maybe had some ideas going in which clusters we would find, but we didn't really know. So in my mind, it's actually a more useful tool for generating hypotheses and kind of a starting point of what more do we want to look at, what are some things that we should maybe think about following up and teasing apart in our data based on what we have found here. So it really suggests that we need to do some more work to better understand our results. I would just like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Amy Wohl, and of course the director of our program, Mario Perez. And thank you for your attention. Happy to answer questions.